Golf Smarter number 72 for May 1st, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Off the Beaten Cart Path with author Dave Marendette.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Golf Smarter podcast. I know there are many choices of podcasts and golf podcasts, and the fact that you continue to listen to the Golf Smarter podcast, I find quite flattering, and I appreciate it very much. On today's program, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf answers a question about the customized clubs that pros play versus the customized clubs that we can play, and will announce the winner of the Callaway Travel Bag. Golf Smarter is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. Please contact Jay Ewing at Bird Golf Academy to find out why the Bird Golf Academy is best suited for your game, your method of learning, and your style of play. Click on the Bird Golf Academy link at golfsmarterpodcast.com. And don't forget that all listeners of the Golf Smarter podcast receive an exclusive 10% discount at the Bird Golf Academy. Hey, serious props go out to head coach Mark Hankins and his Michigan State golf team for winning their second Big Ten championship in the past 3 years. If you haven't already, please listen to the interview with Mark Hankins, which is a fascinating conversation if you're interested in golf at the college level. Our guest today is Dave Marendette, author of Off the Beaten Cart Path, uncovering the stories of America's little-known but beloved golf courses. Dave is also the head golf professional at Robeson Ranch Golf Club. Now, there's no need to adjust anything that you're listening to. There's going to be a slight change in the way I sound because I have a different microphone for this interview because we did it outdoors in Arizona.
Welcome, Dave.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
It is beautiful to be here. We're outdoors right now at the Wild Horse Pass Resort in Chandler, Arizona, outside by the pool. So you're going to hear kids and birds and things going on. But it was too beautiful. We had to do this outside. Thanks for coming out. Your book is called Off the Beaten Cart Path. And you got in a mobile home with your wife and traveled around the country looking for golf courses that not everybody plays, right?
That's absolutely correct. We just decided one day after I'd been in the golf business for about 6 or 7 years and working 50, 60-hour weeks that it was time to take a break. And we hit the road in our motorhome. And a lot of times we worked in campgrounds and also at golf courses. And along the way, the golf courses we worked at were usually small golf courses, 9-hole courses in little small towns in America. And from that came the gem of the idea to do something like this. You know, there's over 16,000 golf courses in the United States. Mm-hmm. The ones you only hear about in the major magazines are the large resorts, like we're at today.
Like we're at today.
That's what
they're being built for today, so they can be listed as one of the top, you know, by magazines, as one of the top resorts.
Precisely.
But that's not what we play on a regular basis.
No. If you travel through the Midwest, you know, there's hundreds of towns that have little 9-hole golf courses that the only people that play them are the local folks.
Sure.
Very seldom are they discovered by travelers or people looking to go on a golf vacation or something like that.
So it's not like you would go to a course, play it, and leave. Go to a course, play it, and leave. Sometimes you'd stop and stay for a while.
Oh, exactly. One of the courses in our book is from Beaver, Utah. We stayed there for a couple days, and we found a campground we wanted to stay in. And the campground listing in the campground book said that there was a nice campground, real great Mexican restaurant. We had no idea there was a golf course there. So we pulled in and to the campground and asked if there was a golf course in town, and the lady that checked us in at the campground said, oh yeah, if you just go up the street a couple miles, we've got a little 9-hole golf course here. Well, come to find out, this little 9-hole golf course was built, I think it was in the late 1960s, on an old Mormon missionary fort.
Wow.
And it was actually built around a horse race track that they had in town. But the curious thing about this golf course is their seventh hole, which is about a par five of 500 yards, the first 350 yards goes right through the middle of the racetrack. When you walk from the sixth green to the seventh tee, you actually walk across the racetrack, and there's a sign before you cross the racetrack that tells you that caution, beware of the horses have the right of way.
You mean there's actually horses running while people are still playing?
If they're practicing, they could be. Two or three times a year when they actually have horse races in the town, they actually shorten the hole from a 500-yard par 5 to about a 150-yard par 3.
Oh, good.
But it's one of the more unique holes you'll ever come across.
Are there terrible stories of horses getting whacked or even jockeys getting whacked?
No, they never.
Balls
they,
that are flying by.
They never had the. No one ever related any story like that to me.
Oh,
but
God,
they
that
take precautions.
Terrifying.
For that.
Yeah, it's,
but it was so unique.
That's outrageous. You know, it's funny. My older son has always said to me, everybody's got a story. I mean, he loves to travel, and he loves to talk to people. And he always says, everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. And what jumped out of me in your book was the line, every golf course has a story.
Exactly.
And, you know, we've talked to architects about the design and the strategy of courses and things, but there's more to it than just the beauty of the course or the layout of the course. There's outrageous little stories.
Every one of these. Like, the reason they built this course in Beaver is because they decided they needed something else in the town to attract people and also provide recreation for the town people. So they built this little nine-hole golf course around the racetrack. It's not terribly long. You know, there's a couple of par fives, and most of the par fours are 350 yards
and
or
are
so.
They designed by local folks? Or
yeah, it was just designed by local folks. It's nothing.
That's crazy. Give me another one. This is. I'm just going to let you tell the story.
Well, there was one we came across in Rawlins, Wyoming. Mm-hmm. It's on Interstate 80, and we were on our way from Denver, heading out toward Salt Lake City, and then down into Las Vegas, and we happened to see a sign in Rawlins for two or three campgrounds. Now, Rawlins is an old oil-producing town. In it's about 100 miles to the west of Laramie, I believe, where the University of Wyoming is. And as we're driving between Laramie and Rawlins, we're kind of looking at each other and going, yeah, I wonder what kind of golf course we're going to find in Rawlins, if there is one.
Yeah.
Well, as we came up to the first exit in Rawlins, we look off to our right-hand side, and there's this golf course carved out of the high alkaline prairie. Just patches of green in a brown alkaline environment. And we went to the campground, inquired about the golf course, and they said, yeah, it's a new one that's just opening. And so we went down to the golf course, and I introduced myself to the pro, and he said, yeah, this is the first day we've been open to the public.
Oh, man.
And they took me out, and I met a gentleman who explained the golf course to us.
Had anyone played the course yet?
We had not played the golf course.
Had anyone else, or were you the first one out?
No, this was on a Sunday, I believe, and they had opened it for private play on Friday and Saturday. Sunday was the first day it had actually been open to the public.
Right.
Turns out the golf course was a gift from a man named Rochelle, who was an entrepreneur and had given millions of dollars to the University of Wyoming. And he wanted to give something back to his hometown of Rawlins. And the city fathers met and decided that a golf course would be nice. So they hired an architect named Ken Kavanaugh, who's done a lot of golf courses in the southeast.
Sure.
And Kavanaugh put this golf course together. And it was around $6 or $7 million to build the golf course.
Wow.
And Mr. Rochelle donated the money to build the golf course. And it's just a marvelous golf course. It at its farthest tees back, it plays at about 7,800 yards. Now you got to remember the altitude there is up around, I think, 4,000 to 5,000 feet.
The ball travels well.
But the story behind this golf course, how it came to be, was fascinating to us. It's just not a little 9-hole golf course. It's an 18-hole regulation golf course. That's just it's difficult and it's fun to play.
Yeah, interesting. You know, talking about being the first one to get a chance to play on the course. A friend of mine joined a course that was under construction, and as they were getting closer, he went up to the head pro and he said, "I need to ask a favor." And the guy says, "Sure. What do you need?" Because he put his money up early. He says, "I want to be the very first person to tee off on this golf course." And the head pro is looking at him like, "What for? Why would you care?" And he goes, "I want to hold the course record." Even if it's for only two rounds, I want to hold the course record at some point. And he knew this was the only way he was going to get a chance to do it. What was the strangest course that you saw?
The strangest course that we saw? Yeah, I think probably one in New York State that is maybe 30, 40 miles sort of south of Oneonta and maybe 15 or 20 miles north of Binghamton. This golf course was originally designed as 9 holes and in the late 40s by a gentleman that was working for IBM in Endicott, and they doubled the green fees one year. I think it went from something like 50 cents to a dollar and this was in the late 40s, and he didn't like that. So he went out, bought a patch of land, and built his own 9-hole golf course.
There you go.
And in the late 1990s, I think it was, his family had taken it over after his passing, and they decided to build another 9 holes. And it's got a very similar theme. It's hilly. The interesting thing about it is their 13th hole is only 100 yards, but it was carved entirely out of a rock quarry. So you tee off from a slightly elevated tee, play 100 yards down, and the only thing between you and the green is you have the green, you have a little area of fringe, and then the entire hole is encompassed in a rock quarry.
Oh my.
If you miss the green, your ball just bounces wildly in any direction.
That would be kind of fun. It's like playing, I don't know, indoor football or something. All the walls are in play here. And
yeah.
Yeah,
the gentleman that originally owned the golf course and built it, when he passed away, he asked that his ashes also be sprinkled over the golf course.
So, what a beautiful story.
I've heard stories of ghosts there, but so nothing ever materialized.
Right. If you hit a ball over towards the rocks and someone just grabs onto it, just kind of sticks there.
That was a really interesting golf course.
Did you guys set a time limit of, okay, we're going to be on the road for a few months, or it was just wide open?
No, it was wide open. We just hit the road. And we came across...
Living the dream. I mean,
it was so much fun.
Wait, does your wife play golf?
Oh, yes.
Oh, so that's how you got her agree to do
this. She did all the photography in the book.
Oh, okay.
All the pictures that are in the book and on the covers and everything was done by my wife, Ellie.
Yeah, I'll put her to work, huh? All right, you can go on the trip with me, but you got to bring your camera.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, probably
so
one
no
of the
no time limit. So, how long did your trip take you?
Well,
or are you still on it?
No, well, we're sort of still on it. We have a permanent place here in Arizona now, but we still have a motorhome. And as we travel during the summers or on vacations, we still find these little golf courses. We've probably got another 15 golf courses we could have put in the book. And hopefully we'll come out with an off-the-beaten-cart-path two sometime in the future.
Again. Right.
Because there's, like I said,
what was
the
most expensive course that you played?
Well, the most expensive one...
These little off-the-beaten-path courses.
Yeah, most of these golf courses, like the one in Beaver, Utah, was like $12 to play 9 holes,
man.
Walk 9 holes. Probably the most expensive one we played was Gray Plantation in Louisiana. That was a regulation 18-hole, full 18-hole golf course that's kind of set way down in southern Louisiana. And we came across that through Golf Magazine as one of the top golf courses to play in the United States that was under $50. And I think if you went to play there, it was like $35 or something like that to play golf.
So your accommodations were not expensive because you were, this was your mobile home.
The accommodations were our mobile home.
Golf wasn't expensive. This is the way it should be done. This Arizona $200 a round golf is... Yeah. I'm sorry. I think it's
one interesting town we came into was Van Horn, Texas, out on I-10 way in West Texas. And we researched and found a nice little campground in town and had found out that there was a golf course there. And we went in and checked into the campground and inquired to where the golf course is. And the husband and wife that owned the golf course, or rather owned the campground, told us, well, if you take your receipt from the campground here to the golf course, your green fees are free. You just need to pay for your cart if you want to ride. Apparently, everyone in town, the businesses, the hotels, and the campgrounds all have these corporate memberships, if you will, for the golf course. So anyone that stays with them can go out and play the golf course for free. You just have to pay for a cart if you want.
Fabulous. So how many states did you cover?
I think there's probably... We actually traveled through about 30 or 35 states. In the book, there's probably a dozen states covered the courses we selected to put in this book.
Okay. And then so total miles that you drove, you were thousands and thousands.
Well, one summer we made a loop totally around the country. We went from Florida to Maine, across the northern United States, back down through Las Vegas, all the way through Texas and back to Florida. And that was around 9,000-mile trip.
Unbelievable.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
And making great friends and hearing great stories all across the way.
Yeah, so like you said, Fred, every one of these golf courses has a story. And if you just chat with enough people at the golf course, you find out about these stories.
But you would pull into towns and not even know if there was a golf course
there. In a lot of cases, that's true.
And so how would you find that out?
Just ask at the campground or if you're in town. Probably the most beautiful golf course we played was called Sky Mountain. And I think on the cover of the book, in the lower left-hand corner, there's a picture of Sky Mountain.
Yeah.
As you come off of Interstate 15, there's a golf course that's carved out of the granite right off the interstate. However, if you go about 5 miles inland to the town of Hurricane, in through a housing development is the local golf course. It's a city-owned golf course. And as you stand on the first tee, you can see the mountains in the background just cascading up to the sky.
Beautiful.
And it's just carved out of this lava and sandstone and everything. It's just, that's probably the most beautiful golf course we encountered as we went around.
Old Man River.
Yeah.
What's that? I'm looking at chapters now. I want the stories. Tell me about Old Man River.
That is in Suwannee, Florida. It's a little 9-hole golf course. It was built, I think, in the 20s. And the Suwannee River is near there. And this golf course was originally sand greens. When World War II came along, they turned over the golf course to graze for the grazing of cows and things like that. And then eventually they restored the golf course. The lady we got a lot of the information from at that golf course, her name was Lou Mills. She was, I think, in her late 80s or early 90s when we talked with her 3 or 4 years ago. And a couple years previously, she had just made a hole-in-one at the golf course. And it's just a short little golf course, really small greens, fairly hilly. But it's the members' golf course, and we were treated just marvelously there. In fact, on another pass through that area, we stopped there again at another time and told them that the course was going to be in the book, and they were just thrilled. And, you know, we got to play it and it was just, you know, it's just a wonderful experience. They've got some pictures on the wall of the founding fathers of the golf course from the, you know, early 1900s.
There must be people who just hang out at these golf courses They're just regulars, like at a bar. You know, there's always the guy in the corner. He's always there. There's got to be some great personalities that you came across, people who had great stories to tell or were just outrageous people in their own right.
Yeah, you know, one of the golf courses that's in the book is actually is called the Pines. It's in Claremont, New Jersey, and I worked there for a whole summer, and I thought it would be a good story for the book. The course was actually built by two or three brothers that owned a hardware store in town, and it's an executive golf course with all par threes and par fours, and it's always been in marvelous condition. And they just took a rectangle of land with the pine trees down by the Jersey shore and designed and constructed this golf course themselves. And it's extremely narrow, small greens, and to go around there and shoot par is an accomplishment. Some of the par threes are 180 yards to large double-tiered greens. One of the greens I know, I think it's their sixth hole, is two-tiered from left to right. And from left to right on the green, it's 135 feet from left to right on the green. And the hole plays about 180 yards from the tee box. And they're all bent grass greens, and it's just marvelous. The owners of this golf course were interesting characters. Like I said, they owned a hardware store, and I think they also owned a construction business. And they just decided they wanted to do something different. They were golfers. So they went out and built this themselves, and it was fascinating to talk to them. And just they did all the landscaping themselves, all the grading and everything. They didn't hire a high-priced architect to come in and design a little executive golf course for them.
And there must be some towns that an entire industry or company is just centered around this little town out in the middle of nowhere. Did you come across any like that?
We didn't come across anything like that. We did come across a golf course in Garner, Iowa. It's just, again, it's just a little nine-hole golf course. It costs you between $10 and $15 to walk nine holes. They built the golf course because they wanted a way to attract some corporate business in to do tournaments and things like that. So gentleman owned the land, sold it to the city at a modest price, and they built this little small nine-hole golf course out there. It's a little bit south of Forest City where the Winnebago Motorhome Factory is located.
Oh, okay. So all the Winnebago folks.
Yeah, in fact, I think the course in Forest City, Bear Creek, is also in the book. That course has an interesting origin also. The front nine was built in the 1930s, so it is old-style design from the 1930s. Short, narrow, small greens. And then in the late 1990s, they decided to add another nine holes on. What they did was actually add another 10 holes onto the golf course. The purpose being they were going to renovate the other nine holes and redo the greens and that. And they were planning on doing one hole at a time so that people could have 18 holes to play. They had an extra hole built onto the new nine. Now, the new nine is typical modern design. Large greens, fairly wide landing areas. In fact, the green that's shared by the 10th and 17th holes is a huge double green that you see fairly often now with some golf architects. And as it turned out, their 11th hole was close to the Winnebago River. And when we were there to play it the year before, the Winnebago River had flooded and wiped out the 11th hole. So what you did is you kind of skipped the 11th hole, went to the 12th hole, but you still had 18 holes to play.
Give me one more good one.
I think probably one of the more unique, for lack of a better word, golf courses we came across was Swiss Fairways, just outside. It's in Groveland, Florida. Mm-hmm. And it is also the site of a Swiss ski school. Now, that's not snow skiing, that's water skiing.
Oh, okay, good. You're in Florida, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a couple of large canals that go through the golf course that this water ski school uses so that people can train or just enjoy water skiing behind a boat.
Right.
And there's two holes that actually traverse over the canals, and the golfers are supposed to give way to the skiers when they...
It's
when
and distracting.
If, yeah, when and if they can hear them coming in the boats. And there have been instances where golfers have not paid attention.
Yeah.
And a couple of skiers have been hit from time to time.
Oh! Ouch!
But, one of the holes, the second hole on the golf course is a par 3 that plays about... 160, 70 yards, and 150 yards is carry over the canal to a green that's kind of carved out of a bank on the far side. It's most unusual, and there's a big sign that sits on the tee box that tells you that the skiers have the right of way, and the golfers are supposed to wait until the skiers pass before they hit their shots to the green.
I can just imagine you coming home. And your wife says, how was your round today? Oh, it was great. I had 5 pars, 3 birdies, and a skier.
Yeah. But there's stories like that all over the country. You just have to go to these small towns and dig them out. It takes a little time sometimes, but these are the gems you find.
Fabulous. Great. Well, the book is called Off the Beaten Cart Path, and it's fun reading. It's a simple read, you know what? It's a great gift book. If you have a buddy or a friend who's a golfer and you want to give them something different, you know, everyone gives them the same. This is a great kind of gift to give. It's called Off the Beaten Cart Path. Dave Marendette, thanks so much for coming up and talking to me and joining us on the Golf Smarter podcast.
It's been our pleasure. Been a lot of fun. Thank you, Fred.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at edwinwattsgolf.com, would like to help. And if we use your question on the show, you will receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. To submit your question, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com. Golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Hi, Kenny.
Hey, Fred. How are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing just fine. Did you have a great weekend?
Oh, man, an awesome weekend. The weather here right now is just absolutely perfect for about another month until the humidity starts to kill us.
Oh, see, springtime. I mean, I was in Arizona and here in California. Springtime is so wonderful everywhere. My wife was in Chicago over the weekend, and she couldn't believe how gorgeous the weather was.
Oh, it's great. Great right now.
Yeah, and then... summer, and it gets worse. Hey, got a couple questions I wanted to read to you. First one came from Bruce Kenzie in Carmel, Indiana. And he said, like to know how valuable to the good player, he's a 10 handicap, custom-made clubs or shafts would be. Most people buy clubs off the rack, and it would be great to have a discussion on the merits of custom clubs. Everyone knows the pros have very custom clubs, even though they're playing name brands. What do you have to say about that, my friend?
It's a good question. There's so much emphasis put on custom clubs or what have you. And the fact of the matter is they don't have custom clubs or custom shafts. They get fitted for a product that you can buy, I can buy, or anybody can buy. And they get fitted for a shaft, which is the same, that anybody can get.
Well, I mean, doesn't it make sense that they would use a branded club because they're getting paid to wear all the clothes with the logos on and stuff, and they're trying to sell product.
Yeah, very good point. But, I mean, consider this. A company's going to pay you a ton of money and go out there and play a product that doesn't perform well for you. It's not going to happen, guys. It's just these guys are out there to make money. It's not a team sport, it's an individual sport. So if a manufacturer says, hey, we're going to pay you a bunch of money, we want you to play this club, and you can't play it, you're not going to make money. So they're not going to offset the difference. What they do is they find a product that they like, which every one of these consumers or manufacturers is going to make a product that's going to be good for most people out there. The thing is trying to find which one of those products is good for that person. And what they do is they take the same product that you and I can get. I mean, it might be a forged blade that most people can't play or a Pro Series iron that a lot of people can't play just because of their ability. But they take that club and they fit it to the right shaft to get the optimal performance. Now, that being said, if you have the ability to go get fitted by a PGA professional, that is the best way to do it. The most important thing to consider in doing that is, do I have the correct lie angle for my golf clubs? You know, is the toe digging in a little too much, which is going to cause you to hook the ball? Is the toe digging in too much, which is going to cause you to slice the ball? Or am I hitting it just right? Those are important factors to know. If you're not fitted correctly there, then your game is going to suffer significantly. The other thing to consider there is also whether or not you need steel or graphite shafts, whether or not you need stiff or regular flex. Swing speed can dictate the majority of that. You know, if you're a very hard swinger, then obviously you need to go with a stiff shaft. Is the length correct? You know, are you 5'7" and might need something just a little bit shorter? Are you 6'2" or 6'3" and need something a little bit longer and a little bit more upright? All those factors come into play. The pros don't have a huge advantage over you or I in a product out there that, hey, this thing's only available for the pros. You can't get it. Okay, you can get it, or you can get something very close to it. You know, you can take, we'll just use Callaway as an example, where they make an X20 and then they make an X20 Tour. Difference being the Tour is designed with less offset and for the better player. The X20 has a little bit of offset on it. Somebody that's not as good a ball striker, it helps them get the hands in front of the ball to create lift.
Explain offset to me one more time, please.
If you look down at the golf club, straight down the hosel, the majority of the clubs that you see out there for the average consumer, the head of the golf club is going to be offset towards the, you know, if you're a right-handed golfer, it's going to be to the right side of the shaft. And what that does is it helps get your hands just a little bit more in front of the head or the shaft of the golf club, and that's going to create lift. Okay, that's a lot of what helps create lift, and it makes a more forgiving iron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now being able to get fitted into that golf club, okay, let's just say that that you're short in stature, okay, and you're playing a club that's designed for somebody that's 6 foot, and you're 5'5" or 5'6". So typically what's going to happen is the heel of that golf club is going to hit first. Okay, what's that going to do? Automatically it's going to close the toe down and cause you to slice the ball. Okay, and vice versa, if you're 6'1" or 6'2" and you're using a club that's too flat for you, the toe of the golf club is going to hit the ground first, and it's going to cause the heel to come through first, and you're going to slice the golf ball. What a PGA professional is able to do is to get you into the right lie angle, okay? And then they're able to fit you into the correct shaft. I'll give you a perfect example. I was playing with a well-known professional one time.
Come on, who was it?
No, I'm not a name dropper. But he had just won a big tournament, okay? Now, I'll name the tournament. It was the Masters, okay? This was 3 days. He won on Sunday. I played with him on Wednesday.
Get out. Come on.
Yeah, and he
Who
had.
Was it? Come on.
They had five. I'll give you the year. It was 01. They had five drivers.
Go online here and look it up now.
They had five drivers set aside for this guy to try, because he felt like if he could fly it just a little bit further, he'd be able to clear some of the bunkers that he was hitting it in on the golf course. So I sat there and watched him hit these drivers, and they were all made with the exact same loft, the exact same shaft, the exact same specs. He would hit one, no good. He'd hit another one, save this one. He'd hit one, no good. Hit another one, let's try this one. So, you know, that's just telling you that you can make a golf club for somebody that is the exact specs that it's supposed to, but no two clubs are the same. So, I think the most important thing to get out of this conversation is get fitted for what you need in irons, and then custom order what you need. The majority out there, I can tell you, will be able to play clubs off the rack just because, it fits, standard clubs fit a wide variety of golfers out there. If you're 6'2" and you bend over a lot, you don't have a traditional stance, you bend over a lot, then you're probably going to be able to use a standard golf club. It's those things that a PGA professional is going to help you find out.
Okay. Now, is it really a buyer's market for the pros out there as far as selecting their clubs? I'm sure that these club manufacturers are all coming to them with great sponsorship deals and clothes and clubs and everything, and they can just say, nah, I don't like your club. I want to go with that club.
You can look at certain players that are sponsored by certain manufacturers. And I'm talking about, you know, the better players out there on tour. They require a manufacturer in their contract the majority of the time to say, hey, you know, I'll carry the bag, I'll wear the hat, shirt, shoes, all that stuff, but if you don't make a product that I can play, then I don't have to play your product. I mean, wow. How many times I've watched the television, watched a PGA event, and seen a head cover for a certain manufacturer, and when they pull the head cover off, it's not the club.
Really?
It's a different branded club underneath the head cover.
Wow.
So, they, you know, the majority of them say, hey, you know, I'll play your clubs when you make something that I can play. If they don't, the majority of the times they can. And it's just tweaking this or that in order to get them comfortable with a product to be able to go out there and play with it.
Well, we've seen that over time and again with Tiger and the Nike drivers, right?
That, absolutely correct. He does play their driver, and he has for a long time. He switched from steel to graphite finally, which was a big change for him. You know, and he's one of the guys.
He went to graphite?
Yeah, he has a graphite shafted driver now. So,
and isn't that based on club head speed? I mean, is there anybody faster?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at Bubba Watson. I mean, he's the longest driver on tour right now. I'm sure his club head speed might be maybe a little bit higher than Tiger's. I'm not sure. I haven't looked that up. But
did you just say Tiger?
Exactly.
Did you just say 2001 Masters winner?
I did. So you put two and two together.
No, I used the internet. Are you kidding? You get to play with him a couple days after?
It was. It was 4 days or 3 days after.
Okay. We haven't talked about this? Are you kidding me?
We're not going to either, Fred.
Oh, God.
But, club head speed has a lot to do with it. He finally found a shaft that fit his game. You know, graphite's gotten a lot more consistent than it used to in the past. So, I mean, you're able to get torques that are much lower. You can vary the kick point where you need to and things of that nature. But in Tiger's contract, it specifically says, hey, you know, if you don't make a product that I can play, I'm not going to play it. Obviously, Tom Stikes, who's the engineer behind the majority of the Nike products out there, was able to come up with a golf club that he can play, you know, for Tom fairly easy. He's a genius. But, you know, those guys do get a little bit of special treatment from the manufacturers, obviously, but you can get fitted from a PGA pro who can do what they need to do to get you in the right clubs. And if you're afforded the luxury to get on a launch monitor to be able to get fitted for a driver, the launch monitor is going to tell you exactly what you need for loft and shaft as well. I don't know how many times I've, you know, had a guy say, hey, I hit my buddy's driver and I love it. I want to get one, and he gets it. And he's like, man, I just don't hit it the same. Well, sometimes it's just because, you know, no two clubs are exactly the same. The most important thing, though, on irons is to be fitted for flex, what shaft you need, steel or graphite, and make sure that the lie angle is correct.
Okay.
So, very good question. You could talk on it for a long time.
Clearly, yeah. And frankly, I'm not talking to you anymore. I'm mad at you now. Okay, well, we have other things we have to take care of, so I'll talk to you about that. Really played? We have a giveaway to do here, Kenny. So now that people are buying new clubs, they need a travel bag, and we're going to give them a Fusion Callaway travel bag with the Power Pole system. And we have received a number of entries. The number is actually 197 entries. And I have sorted these names out by first name. I just love to watch people react when I say how we sorted them out. No, you were supposed to do it by city this week.
Have fun doing this, Fred.
I really do have fun doing this, as I'm just blown away that people would even enter. But you're giving away such great stuff. Why wouldn't they enter? And how come we're only getting 197 entries when we have a larger audience than that? I know we do. But it doesn't matter.
It's just an email. I mean, send the email.
It's not even that. It's a click.
Yeah, that's all.
You know,
it
we've
is.
Made it easier, and that's why the number of entries have more than doubled since we've made it just a click. Go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on contest, fill it in, and if you have cookies set up in your computer, next time you go, it'll be ready for you. It'll be waiting, and so it'll be very easy to enter every single time. Just so you know, and we'll make this disclaimer, we've made it before, but the email address that you provide to us, we do give that over to Edwin Watts Golf because Kenny likes you, and he wants to help you
purchase the right gear for you. But Kenny, you get to pick who the winner is today between number 1 and 197, sorted by first name, and you are going to select what?
I'm going to go 197. How about that?
So, number 197 is a name that I'm going to have difficulty pronouncing properly, and I apologize for that, but it comes from Sausalito, California, and that is going to be William Namnath.
Congratulations, William.
That is awesome. So, William, I know if you live in Sausalito, you're going to be traveling. You're going to put that on your boat, and you're going to be taking your boat down to other places and other golf courses, and you'll have a new Callaway travel bag to put in there. So that is great news. But now, what do you want to give away next?
Everybody can use a bag, and I like this one myself. We're going to do the Nike Extreme Cart Bag.
Ooh. Now, what is a cart bag? There's a cart bag and there's a stand bag, right?
That's correct. And then okay. You have this big staff bags. But a cart bag is specifically designed to have all the pockets forward-facing. So when you get off the cart to get your clubs, all your pockets are there, easily accessible. And it also has the individual club slots, which, to me is essential when you basically ride on a cart the whole time. It keeps your grips and your shafts from getting in each other. I don't know how many times I've grabbed a club and pulled it out, and about four others come out with it. So,
and I feel the same way about pulling them out, even on a stand bag, which I prefer a stand bag because I don't do carts as much. Don't they have stand bags that have individual slots too?
They do, absolutely. Now, a lot of stand bags are coming out. And if they don't have individual slots, the majority have them, what's called full-length dividers. So, you have one slot that'll hold three clubs or what have you, and you're not going to pull out any extra golf clubs with it.
Okay. So. Well, this is a Nike Extreme Cart Bag, and we're going to give this away. The deadline for entry is midnight, May 21st, and we will announce the winner on the program of May 22nd, 2007. And in an effort to make entering this drawing so easy, we've done it. Like we said before, all you have to do is go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on contest. It'll tell you what we're going to be giving away, and then you just fill out your name and the information we ask of you. If you'd like to write me a note, I retrieve those notes. I respond to you. I do my best at doing that. It may be very late before the drawing, but I do get it done because I appreciate you taking the time to do this. So again, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on contest. Fill out the form. Or, of course, you could just send an email to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com and make sure that you put Nike cart bag as the subject of your email, so it'll go to the correct place and it won't be overlooked. I do want to remind everybody that when you're at golfsmarterpodcast.com, please click on the Edwin Watts Golf banner, and that will take you to our special page that will show you the hat that you'll receive if you ask Kenny a question. It'll also explain to you how you will receive a 10% discount on almost everything that you purchase at Edwin Watts Golf or edwinwattsgolf.com, and that you also receive free shipping. Now, these are offers only extended to Golf Smarter listeners. 10% discount, free shipping. And I've received emails from people all over the world who have said they've used this, they like the discount, and they love the service that they get at Edwin Watts Golf. Kenny, you should have a lot of pride in that.
We absolutely do.
You can also call 1-800-874-0146. Make sure you tell them you're a Golf Smarter listener and demand your discounts. Kenny Nicholson, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, Fred.
And remember, if you have a question for Kenny, just go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the Ask Kenny button. And while you're there entering the new contest, you'll see a complete list of all the great prizes provided by Edwin Watts Golf and who won each time. And please do me this favor. While you're at our website, check out the rest of the new website, which is called smarterpodcasts.com. Remember, it's plural, podcasts. And at the end of today's show, I'll play you a promo for Radio Baseball Cards. If you're a baseball fan, and especially a baseball history buff, I promise you'll get a kick out of this show that I originally produced in 1987 with one of my childhood heroes, Hall of Fame pitcher Don Drysdale. That's Radio Baseball Cards at smarterpodcasts.com and, of course, at iTunes. This week's closing quote comes from Jim Fincham, head golf coach at DeKalb High School in Waterloo, Indiana. Now, my guess is that the team is listening to the Golf Smarter podcast right now on their way to a tournament, and I just want to wish you all good luck, and I apologize if you guys have heard this quote 1,000 times from Coach Jim, but Ben Hogan once said, The secret is not hitting every shot perfect. The secret is getting the most out of the shots you don't hit perfect. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, we've made that a lot easier too. Please click on the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarterPodcast.com.
Here's another radio baseball card.
If you ask me who the greatest baseball player in history of baseball was, I'd say Babe Ruth. I feel like I've been cheated as a baseball player not being able to see Babe Ruth play the game of baseball. I would have loved to play against Babe Ruth, but if I did, I'd probably be dead now, so maybe I shouldn't say that.
That was Pete Rose, the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history, and this is your invitation to subscribe to Radio Baseball Cards, hosted by the late Hall of Famer and network announcer, Don Drysdale. Radio Baseball Cards is a series of amazing and sometimes amusing stories recorded in 1987 featuring some of the greatest players of the 20th century. Here's rookie Barry Bonds.
Sometimes I'm a boxer out on the baseball field, you know, and sometimes Eddie Murphy, or some days I'm a Clint Eastwood, you know, just really mad.
My first World Series, I was just a young kid in Chicago, and we played probably the greatest team of all time, the 1932 Yankees.
Also, this being the 60th anniversary of the breaking down of baseball's color barrier, we speak to teammates, opponents, and admirers sharing their favorite memories in celebration of Jackie Robinson. Hall of Fame catcher, the late Roy Campanella.
I can't speak for Jackie, but God knows I know he felt this way. It was a challenge to prove that blacks could play on the field and be gentlemen off of the field.
Collect a piece of baseball history that sounds as fresh today as it did 20 years ago. Subscribe to the premium edition podcast of Radio Baseball Cards at iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.